It's 12888. I'm in Acres East. Mm-hmm. And you are Michelle?
Irwin.
Michelle Irwin. And if you could give me your major and your hometown.
My major is mechanical engineering, and I'm from Dearborn Heights, Michigan.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two older brothers.
And you are a junior?
This is my third year at college, yeah.
Now, you've looked at all these questions, mm-hmm. or some of them.
Most of them, yeah.
Are there any particular questions which interest you more than others?
Not really. And which ones are you most interested in finding out?
You're from Dearborn Heights. Just describe the neighborhood, the house, the streets, the feeling of the place you grew up in.
It was very sheltered. Few students from my high school went away to school. Most of the people stayed there, went to U of M, Dearborn, or the community college, and stayed in Dearborn Heights, got married, moved back to Dearborn Heights after they were married, and it's just like generation after generation, people stayed in that area and didn't get away from it. The car industry is right there in Dearborn, so that was prevalent. Most people worked for the car industry or somehow were related to that industry. It's kind of like a small town because people just stayed there. Although it was just outside of Detroit, it had a lot of small town attitudes and values.
Did you know it at the time when you were growing up? I mean, you're talking from the perspective of someone who has been
away
from home.
Yeah.
When did you begin to get a perspective of this? Can you talk about that?
I think I started to realize it when I was in high school. I didn't like a lot of the attitudes of the people who were around me. My parents didn't have those attitudes, and I started realizing it as I grew up and got older. And now that I moved away from home, I realize it even more. It's like now I can compare it to other things, and I realize that a lot of the values they had, I don't agree with.
They, you're not referring to your parents?
No, I mean the neighbors and the community as a whole.
What values did they have, which you now...
Very self-centered, very prejudiced against many different people, many different groups. If you didn't fit into a certain group or you didn't have the exact same values, they didn't appreciate it and they didn't want it in their area.
Can you give an example of values which...
Well, my high school didn't have any black students. A couple Hispanic. It was predominantly white. And a black family did move into the neighborhood, and they were driven out. They had a lot of problems with their neighbors hassling them, rocks through windows and things like that, and they finally moved out. A couple blocks away from me, a black family has moved in, and they're still living there, which is really good. They've been accepted, and I think one reason is because they're very fair-skinned, and they're very good people. They're very nice, and it's hard. I'm sure they went through a lot of hard times when they first moved in, but it's hard to be continually mean to someone who's going to be continually nice to you.
Well, how did your parents react to a lot of this?
My parents didn't like it, but they...
Didn't like what?
They didn't like what was going, you know, what happened, but I don't think they realized the fact that it has. I mean, it's like the family who moved in, who moved out right away, lived like 4 or 5 miles from our house. Although the students went to my high school, my parents didn't realize that it was going on as much as the students did because we saw it every day. And the newspapers would never print anything about it. You know, so I don't think they realized what was really happening. And it's kind of like we've lived there for 20 years and, you know, it's just they're settled there and they're ready to stay there, I think.
What you're saying, though, is that somehow you escaped something which most people from that community did not escape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what in your background made it possible for you to make that escape.
I think my parents and my brother. My brother was away at school, too, and I started seeing how he changed, and I kind of started taking some of his values when I was in high school. And my parents always encouraged us to get out and do different things. And I was always, you know, just because my mother always taught me, just because they're different doesn't mean they're bad. You know, I mean, you have to accept differences in people. And my parents always have.
I mean, what is the background of your parents, which makes them enlightened?
I don't really know, to be honest. My mom is from England. She's not a United States citizen. Maybe that's something to do with it. But
Do you feel that her view is more enlightened than your father's?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
What does he do?
He used to work for the auto industry.
And your mother?
She also used to work for the auto industry. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird because it's just like a lot of the, like I said, it just stays there. Like the teachers who are in our high school lived in Dearborn Heights. The teachers will say, I had your father, I had your mother, and people just stay in Dearborn Heights, and it's like they're just used to being there, and they're going to continue to live there. And a lot of people will just stay there. And I never liked that. Even in high school, I was always going out and going to different places. I always went to the different high schools and had friends outside of my community. And my parents encouraged that. And I think something else that probably helped it too is I always had a job. So I was always meeting different people.
What jobs did you work at?
I was a waitress in a catering hall. So I met, different high school students working with me who lived in different areas, and then I met their friends, and so I started meeting a variety of different people.
Can you explain why you had a job?
Because I wanted the money, to be honest. I was always independent where I wanted to have my own money to spend on me. Even when my parents gave me an allowance, I never wanted any more than that, and I'd make my allowance pay for some of the things that I wanted because I didn't want to ask them for the money. And I like to have that independence. Even now that I go to college, I like to pay for it myself.
Was your brother that way?
Yes. My parents just raised us to be very independent, to do things for ourselves.
So you have a lot of pride in that area?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so.
Well, all things considered then, you really see yourself as having come from a quite different background.
Different than the one I'm...
In the sense that your parents were encouraging you to do things that other parents in Dearborn apparently weren't encouraging their children to do. I mean, they were pushing you in an independent direction. They were asking you to be more tolerant of outsiders. And from your description of Dearborn Heights, it doesn't sound as though too many people were very tolerant.
Yeah, it's a lot different. The community I'm in up at Michigan State is very different from the one at home. And I enjoy that difference. Just because up here you have to get along with people, you have to accept differences. And that's a problem that a lot of students have when they first come up to school. They're not willing to compromise. They're not willing to deal with different people and to accept them.
And this is due to?
Due to values they had at home, due to the way their high school was run and set up and the different experiences they've had before they came up to MSU.
Well, can you talk about what your, there you are in your last year of high school, and you have certain expectations, dreams. Can you tell me what those were in your last? Can you remember that far back in high school, how you really felt about what you wanted to be and do, where you wanted to go?
Like a lot of people from my high school, we always, we want to, get out of Dearborn Heights, go and do something, go to school, go away, do this, do that. And a lot of people didn't. They're still there. But, that's the one thing I wanted to do. I wanted to go away to school and find out what I wanted to do. I always thought I wanted to be an engineering student, but I was never positive. I thought I wanted to work for the car company just because that was something I knew. And I mean, I just wanted to go away to school, get a job, get married, the stereotypical thing to do, go to school, find a good job, get married, have a family, and live the rest of your life.
Let me pause here for a second, or interrupt. this pattern you describe of high school, college, marriage, profession, mm-hmm. live happily ever after, that pattern, do you think that that pattern is in itself a trap for a lot of people? Why do they have to follow that pattern? Could you talk a little bit about that?
I think it is. A lot of people feel that after they graduate from high school, they either have to get married or go to college, or they have to do certain things. And I don't agree with it. I think you should do what you want to do. I know when I graduate, I don't want to run off and get married. I want to live by myself and do some things for myself before I can start doing things for other people in my life. And I think it is a big trap. I know one of my roommates, she always said that she never had a boyfriend. She thought that was just terrible because when she came to college, she was under the impression, she read a book or had some kind of statistic she always quoted, that isn't this terrible, I don't have a boyfriend, because in college is where you're supposed to meet your husband. And she always said that, and she always worried about that. It was like, this is the time she had to be looking for her husband. And I always felt, this is the time you should be looking for yourself and finding out who you are before you can find someone else to share who you are.
Well, now, you don't have a roommate now, but you're talking about freshman year?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Can you, how about the problems of having a roommate in freshman year? Was that, can you talk about the problems there? You don't have to nail anybody to the wall or mention names if you don't want, but...
No, I was very fortunate my freshman year because I did have a very good roommate. At the time, I didn't think so because she was very, both of her parents were ministers, her mother and her father, and she went home a lot, and I just felt that I didn't have a friend. She was a roommate, she wasn't a friend, and I was jealous of other people because they were such good friends with their roommates, and I thought, oh, you know, I wish I had a better roommate. And at the time, I didn't realize how fortunate I was. Maybe she wasn't a friend, but I had other friends on the floor, but we could live together, and we could compromise. And we did get along well enough where we both could study and sleep. And I was fortunate that I didn't have a roommate who went wild her freshman year and wouldn't allow me to sleep and study and live my life the way I wanted to. Because we did allow each other to have the freedom to do what we wanted in the room.
Now you say... Did not have a roommate that went wild. Do a lot of these freshmen go a little bit crazy?
Yeah, just because...
What do they do? I
mean, for the fact that it's the first time away from home. It's the first time that they have any freedom without their parents standing over them, telling them, be home by one, or I know you've been drinking. And they know that when they come home drunk or come home late or not come home at all, no one's going to know except their roommates, and the roommates aren't going to punish them like their parents might. So it's like, for many, it's the first time they've ever had any kind of freedom, and they take advantage of it, and a lot of times they get themselves in trouble.
Did you have that problem?
No, I never did. Just because in high school, I had a lot of freedom. My parents would always say, be home at a reasonable hour, and it was my discretion what that reasonable hour was. But they trusted me, and they knew what values I had, that they could say that. And they knew that I would be home at a reasonable hour that both myself and my parents could
agree. Were you unreasonable in high school now and then?
I had my moments.
Everyone goes through this, right?
Uh-huh.
Some people go through it freshman year. Some people go through it in their junior year of high school. But you go through it.
I think everyone does. Mm-hmm.
Which means you go beyond your limits at times,
mm-hmm.
right?
I think everyone does, but I think it's better if people did it at home than before they came up here, because to go beyond your limits when you're at home isn't as bad as going beyond your limits when you're up here, just because the limits up here are not as strict as the limits at home.
Well, can you describe some of the freshmen here in terms of how they go beyond their limits? I mean, you must have, they must come into your room and talk about these things.
Yeah, My freshman year, I remember this guy walking down our hall, and he was asking where Wilson Hall was. And people had, he started from Shaw, he told me, and he was looking to find his way back to his dorm room in Wilson. And he was totally lost. He was on the opposite end of campus because everyone directed him the wrong way. And he was that intoxicated where he didn't know where he was going. He didn't know campus well enough to know where he was going. And he just didn't have any sense of direction at that point. And he was about ready to pass out. And I mean, to go beyond your limits where you can't control yourself like that. And then women do it a lot of times and get themselves in trouble because people take advantage of them. And that's happened, you know, more than people wish to realize.
How about group insanity where half the dorm floor gets involved in a water fight or something like that? Do you have any memories of that? Or is this, you gave me an isolated example uh-huh. of one guy drunk and not knowing where he was.
Let's see. Water fights, different things like that. I mean, that happens. It's a good way to release tension. A lot of times that'll happen, like, after midterms or during finals week. People will just go running down the hallway screaming, and then everyone will follow them, and it's just like, ah, get us out of here. But, I mean, things like that, it's a lot of times it's a release of tension, just like drinking is. And, I mean, it's okay to a point where no one's going to get hurt or no one else is affected by it. But a lot of people don't think about what they're doing until it's too late.
How big is the drinking problem in the dorms?
I think the only reason that people think about the residence hall as being a problem for drinking is just because it's most of the people who live here are underage and they're minors. I think there's just as big of a drinking problem off campus as there is on. But it might be more so here because people are underage, and this is the first time they come to the residence hall first to live, and this is the first place they get their freedom. I think it's a problem, but I think it's a problem for people who don't go to college. It's a problem in our society more than it is a problem at college. It's just people recognize when you go away to school, you're going to party. You know, people just kind of, they isolate that fact more, maybe because of the movies or maybe because it's a large group of people coming together. So you can see statistics more on that group than on other people.
How about drugs?
I think I feel the same way, that it's a problem with our society. I think alcohol is a larger problem because most of the people who come up here are educated enough where they know that drugs are going to affect them more than alcohol. They're more willing to accept that alcohol is just a drink, it's not a drug. They don't realize that that's a drug because it's not stressed in our society as being as wrong as drugs.
Yeah. Let me ask a question there. I mean, you're coming here, and for 4 years, you are accumulating a lot of knowledge mm-hmm. and techniques and so forth, and you're learning about a specific profession, engineering.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that the primary result of college is an academic one? What are you learning? What's really the most important thing about being in college?
Well, I think the most important thing about being here is to learn your field of study. You know, what the purpose you came up here for was to learn. I came up here to become an engineer so I could learn that profession. But I think when you come up here, you learn much more than just the academics of your classes. You learn how to deal with people, how to accept different groups. Because when you come into the residence hall to live, you're living with people of different backgrounds, different people who have different values, ethnic values, social values, and you have to learn to accept those. I mean, maybe someone has, you know, someone's from a different country or whatever, and you've never had to talk to, you know, someone from Africa or someone from Iran, and you're thinking, that you have all these stereotypes about them, and you have to realize that people are people wherever you go, and you have to judge them for the individual and not for the stereotype of that group. And a lot of people have a problem with that. That causes a lot of roommate conflicts.
Did you have a problem with that?
No, to a certain extent, I think everyone does. But I never had a roommate that was of a different ethnic background. My roommates have all had different values, and some of them I didn't appreciate, but I had to learn to live with, or had to talk to her about them so we could live together. We had to compromise.
If you were going to evaluate your own talents academically, how would you do it? I mean, you've chosen engineering, but mm-hmm. have you always known that you wanted to do something in a technical way, that you wanted to be an engineer? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about where that interest came from?
Well, since I came from Dearborn Heights, Dearborn is where Ford Motor Company, the world headquarters, is in Dearborn. So that's always been, like, in my life. And in high school, I went to different seminars about women in engineering, that the car industry had different things that we could go to, different little seminars and things like that. So I was always interested in it. And then I came up to Michigan State and I started taking classes and started realizing that there are a lot of different fields that I could go into. And I still always wanted to be an engineer, but I don't want to go to the car industry after I graduate. I'd rather go into aerospace or something of that nature.
You're saying that because everyone in Dearborn Heights, since it was like a part of an extension of General Motors or whatever, that it was only natural for you to gravitate to this. But I'm asking you on a more personal level, when did you become aware that you had a talent for mathematics or for sciences and things as opposed to something else?
Just in high school and junior high, I always did well in my math courses. And the best teachers I had in high school were my math teachers. They were always more concerned about the students. They were always more willing to help after school. And I think that's one reason, too, is just because those were the teachers that were more concerned, and I could relate to them better than my other teachers. And I think that drew me towards the science field.
Did you do better in the sciences than mm-hmm. the humanities?
Yes, I did.
How well did you do in the other areas?
I always did, you know, B work in English and different subjects like that and in my speech class. But I did about the same across the boards in all my classes. I just liked the math classes better and the science classes. Because I think one reason was because I liked the teachers better.
Do you have any idea what kind of engineering you want to get into? I mean, what kind of a job situation you want to get into?
I've thought about it a lot, and I've gone on a plant tour with McDonnell Douglas in St. Louis, and that really made my interest go towards aerospace. But I haven't really made a decision. I probably won't for a while.
How objective do you think most students are in evaluating their own talents and in picking a major? What does it mean to be objective in that sense? There you are, 19, and you say, oh, I think I want to be an engineer, or I want to be a social worker, whatever. Mm-hmm. What is that really based on, in your opinion?
I think it's based on the knowledge that they have, the limited knowledge that they have from their families or from people they've been in contact with. Because when I came up here, I didn't realize there were so many different majors and so many different fields. And this is my third year up here, and people, you know, you ask them, oh, what's your major? And they come up with these majors I've never even heard of. I never even thought of, like, different construction majors. I didn't know you could get a degree in construction. I mean, construction management or something like that. And it's like, gosh, I never even thought of that. And a lot of students don't realize that there are departments on campus that can tell them of the different majors and different fields of study.
Do you have any idea whether you would like to work for a large corporation, a small engineering firm, or I mean?
I don't really know what the differences are between the large and the small. I think that's my problem, is because I now realize that there are a lot of differences out there. There are a lot of different options I can take. And I also realize that I don't know them all. So I'm kind of like waiting and wondering, and I just keep looking for different things.
Well, what could you do to help make your choice more objective? I mean, you said you're waiting. You're not going to wait till the day after graduation and just jump into a job, are you?
No. Some of the different things that I do is I belong to the Society of Women Engineers, and we have meetings every 2 weeks, and different people come in and talk to us about women in engineering or how to fill out a resume. And usually they're engineers. They're working for some corporation, and they always bring up their job, their background, what they do. I mean, they just give us a little history of themselves and their corporation that they're working for, so we get an idea of the different things that are out there through that.
Do any of them talk about problems with not being a member of the good old boy establishment which controls the company they're working with? Do you know what I mean?
The fact that
you are a woman and that you will never, that your chances of reaching upper management are much less than a man?
No, they never say anything like that. A lot of our speakers that come in are men. And, you know, they always encourage the women just as much or more than the other women engineers. I mean, a lot of times, I was in the SWE office, and this guy came in from some corporation. He's like, Society of Women Engineers, this is a great group. You know, we don't have any women engineers in our firm. It's a fairly small firm. And he gave us tons of literature about his company, and he wanted to come in and speak to us. And he was just really excited that there were groups like SWE on campus for
SWE,
Society of Women Engineers. And I think a lot of times the men encourage women just as much as other women do. And sometimes it's better to hear it from a man, because they're always perceived to be the ones that are putting the women down or trying to suppress the women.
Do you think you will encounter that problem? Does it even bother you at this stage, or something you're not concerned with?
I think I might encounter it. It's not going to bother me. I'll just deal with it. I'm sure it'll bother me at the time, but I'll accept it and deal with it. I mean, I'm sure I'll do something.
Have you felt it here on campus in classes?
A lot of the classes I've had have only had like a few women in a handful compared to a large number of men. And they kind of, you know, a lot of times the guys will laugh, oh, you know, a girl or whatever. I mean, it's not that they're saying that they're any better. I mean, they don't realize that they're kind of saying that they are better, but they're just kind of chuckling because there's only a handful of girls compared to a large number of men in the class. And I don't think that they realize what they're doing a lot of times. But, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I just blow it off as their ignorance, and I might confront them and say something to them if it really bothers me that much, but it doesn't.
But you haven't encountered outright discrimination in the sense of grades or not being allowed to use equipment or something like that?
No. Just the attitudes of some male teachers. Oops, sorry.
Generally speaking, how would you evaluate this university, the level of instruction? Talk about your professors.
I think a lot of times, I've had a few good professors, and I've had some really bad professors. And a lot of times, the courses or the classes are what you make of them. I had one professor that I didn't understand one word that he said during his lecture in class. And I needed the class, I needed to pass the class. So I went and talked to him in his office hours, and I could totally understand him in his office. And when he got up in front of the class, no one could understand him. So to pass the class, I would go in and talk to him, and he would help me one-on-one. And I think a lot of professors have that problem. When they're talking to a large group, they can't get their ideas across as well as when they're talking to a smaller group. And some of the classes here at State are just huge. I mean, 300 people. And that I think that's too many.
You were talking about professors' classes and the fact that some professors seem capable of communicating in their office but not in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? They're using the same words, aren't they?
They are, but maybe it's that they're directing them to me so I am more comfortable with the situation. But sometimes they don't use the same words. They'll, in the classroom, they want to appear to be very intelligent, and they their examples and the things that they say are more abstract, more general. And when you go and talk to them in their office, they're more specific of exactly what they want and exactly what you should be learning.
And what course was that?
It was a math class that I had. I've had that happen in a couple other classes too, though. Like my English, an English class I had, a social science class I had, I went and talked to them. And a lot of times students will say that they, I hate this class, I'm going to flunk it, I'm not going to do well. And if they ever went to talk to their professor, they might be able to pass it. I think a lot of people are intimidated by their professors, and professors will almost encourage that attitude just because they want to seem dominant. They want to seem superior.
How do you rate your own intelligence? I mean, you had one perception of your general level of intelligence in high school,
mm-hmm.
based on how you did among your peers. And that must have changed based on a different level of competition
mm-hmm.
at Michigan State.
Did
it go up? Did it go down? Do you feel, how do you feel about all that? Are you going to
when
make
I was
a major
in high
breakthrough
school,
in engineering? What's going to happen?
No. When I was in high school, I was one of the top in my classes, in my class. And when I came up here, I was like mediocre. I was right in the middle. I mean, I didn't do as well. But I don't think I think everyone has a certain intelligence level. It's just a lot of times when it comes to grades, I don't think that really evaluates how much you've learned or how much you haven't. Because you go into some classes and it's a review for people. It's like, why are you taking this class? And they set the curve because they've had it all before. They're going to do well. They set the curve, and then this is the first time you've experienced this material, so you're not going to do quite as well. Although you might have learned the same amount of material, sometimes you can't express it on a test, or you freeze up on the test and you don't perform as well as you could have or should have.
Does that happen to you? Do you freeze on tests?
I used to a lot more than I do now, just because I've gotten used to the test-taking process. Because before a big math exam, you get nervous and you're worried and you're trying to remember everything. And sometimes you have to sit there for a minute and say, okay, I know this, and then take it.
I finally found a weak spot in you. You clutch a little bit.
I flinch before
tests.
A test, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just because I get nervous and I want to do well. And, you know, when you don't, you kind of get discouraged with yourself, but
do you see yourself as tending more towards being an overachiever as opposed to an underachiever? Or do you continuously set your goals too high, too low, or do you think you're realistic in setting your goals? How would you evaluate that?
I think I'm fairly realistic. I mean, when I attain my goals, I'll set new ones. But I think I don't set them too high where I'll never reach them, because then there's never any gratification that you've accomplished anything. And I don't set them so low that it's so easy that it wasn't any work to achieve them.
Do you rest on your laurels? Do you give yourself a pat on the back when you've done something well? Do you recognize that?
I think I recognize it, but other people have told me, Michelle, you don't realize what, you know, you don't recognize when you've done something right. Like, My job as an RA, my grad tells me, he said, you don't realize the the job you're doing, or, you know, when you do something right, you don't realize it. And I do to myself, but I don't let everyone, you know what I mean? I mean, I realize
you
don't let
others see that you recognize.
Yeah. And I
As an RA, may I make a request?
Uh-huh.
Is there any way we could have that person turn that radio down? Because I'm...
Yeah, I can. Because it's quiet hours.
Because suddenly...
it came on.
Is there any one single professor or event that you've experienced here at Michigan State, or even in your life, that has swung your life around and given you a focus that you otherwise may not have had? Or has it just been a steady, even progression where you can look back and see clearly? Do you know what I'm
asking?
Yeah.
I don't think I let anyone. I'm the type of person, I'm fairly easygoing, and I mean, things affect me, but I won't let any one thing affect me in a great way, in a large scale way. Things slowly will build up and I'll slowly change. I mean, if I'm wrong or something like that, I'll change. You know, if I realize I'm wrong, I'll change right away. But, I mean, to change my values and to change the way I perceive things, I mean, I can see that I have changed since high school, but it's a slow change.
So, you're
I'm
a
not
person
swayed
of moderation.
I'm not swayed easily.
Yeah.
Once I get something set, it's not set in stone, but it'll take a while for me to change my views on it.
Can you give an example of what you're talking about?
Oh, gosh, I can't think of anything. Like,
when I hear you talk, I see some people are on an emotional roller coaster.
Uh-huh.
They're up and down. I mean, they're on cloud nine or they're totally depressed. And I don't know you,
mm-hmm.
but based on just a brief chat, I see you as... Even keeled.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that has changed, I guess, is when I was in high school, I was always up and I was always down. I was just like all over the place. And I've come to realize that don't let things bother you. You know, life's going to go on no matter what happens. I mean, sure, if something bad happens, try to change it or try to fix it to where you like it. But don't get all upset one second and then 2 minutes later, you're happy because this happened. I mean, I do get excited. I mean, a lot of times people are like, oh my gosh, what is, you know, this girl's a ding-dong or whatever, you know, because I do get excited and things very easily, but, you
what
know.
What do you mean by that? Give me an example.
Next year, I'm going to live with a girl who I was going to live with this year, and last night, I was just on cloud nine. I was really happy and excited. We're going to live together next year, and you know, when things make me happy, I like to let other people know. I like to share my happiness with people. And I was just, like, running around last night, and I was very hyper, and I was happy. I was done with my finals, and everything was just, like, finished. So I am fairly level. And inside, a lot of times, I'll be in turmoil. But I don't like to let that out to people.
You don't like to unload your garbage in public or whatever it is.
Exactly.
What's the saying of their own?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm a fairly private person. Mm-hmm. I mean, my friends will know exactly what's going on in my life, my close friends. But people who don't know me that well, they won't know what's happening to me.
Is that partially British?
What do you mean by that?
Your mother was English.
My whole family is from England.
Well, they... Do you see them in a perspective? I mean... The English are traditionally, they have a dry sense of humor,
mm-hmm.
they're conservative, and they're quite subtle. I mean, they don't go to the flamboyant excesses that the stereotypical Italian family does.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess in that respect I am English, very much so, because I don't need extravagant things to make me happy. I am very private, I am very conservative.
Do you have an interest in your roots? I mean, do you want to go to England?
I went to England when I was 10 or so, and I enjoyed it. And I'll go back. I mean, I'm proud to be English. People ask me, and, you know, all my grandparents are from England. So, I mean, I'm proud of that fact.
Emerson, in his essay on education, said that all institutions were dangerous as they lead toward formalism and mechanization. Thinking about what he said, Have you felt yourself being forced into a certain kind of mold as a result of your particular schooling in the College of Engineering? You feel yourself, some of your individuality being crushed as a result of this type of education?
I think some of the things that go on up here, I mean, some of the courses and different things, you are kind of put into a mold, and you start accepting that as the way your life is. But I'm the type of person that I always feel you have to take responsibility for yourself. And if you like what the situation is, then you'll adapt to it and you'll change to that situation. Like, your friends will influence you. And if you like those influences and you like those values, then you'll take them for yourself. But I think a lot of people aren't, but I think people should be individual, be an individual, and to make the decisions for themselves. Although a lot of people don't. They come up here and they see all their friends are doing something, and they're just going to run off and, to be part of the group, take on that.
Now, let me ask you, where do you want to be in 10 years? And rather than answering just in general terms of, oh, well, I want to be happy and have a good job, tell me specifically where you see yourself. Do you see yourself living in a suburb like, well, not Dearborn Heights, that's the wrong example. But what material standard of living do you want? Do you want to be married? Do you want to have children? Do you want to be juggling a job and a family? Specifically, tell me, where do you see yourself in 10 years in terms of a profession, in terms of family life, etc.? Remember, you're going to read
30.
This in 10 years.
Yeah, I'll be 30 then. So I don't want to have, I won't have children, hopefully. I don't want that. I mean, I want to have kids one day, but not when I'm 30. I mean, maybe, hopefully I'll be married by then. I'd like to be. So, I mean, I can be planning on having children in the future. Hopefully I'll be living in a nice community. I don't want to just be a middle-class family. I don't really know how to say that. But I'd like to have a lot of, you know, I'd like to live well. Have a fairly stable job by then. I should have, hopefully, if I ever get out of here. I think about the future, but I think it's going to happen, and I just kind of wait for it. I mean, I plan for it to a certain extent, but things are going to happen the way they are, and I don't make definite plans. I mean, even in my life now, I'll never make definite plans for what I'm going to do next year or spring term. I don't know. I'm just the type of person that I'll wait and see, because things are always changing.
I will give you the transcript, and you will pick it up in 10 years if you still have it. And you'll read it. What do you want to read? I mean, what in terms of your values is really most important? If you were going to look back on your life, you're 30 now, and you're looking back, and you want to have seen some kind of philosophy or train of thought or thinking there. Is there anything now from your age of, how old are you now?
20.
20, that you really think is important?
I hope to stay open-minded. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, it's not what I'm looking for. It's what I think you should be reflecting seriously about when you're 30. I'm really asking you to shoot yourself into the future in some way.
I hope that, to a certain extent, like you said, that I'm very level. I hope that I start opening up to people more easily. A lot of times I'm very closed. When people first meet me, they think I'm a very closed person, you know, almost to the point of being a negative person, and I'm not. My friends who know me know that I'm, you know, I'm very positive, but the first impression that I give people is, you know, boring, negative, and I hope that, I try to change that, but it's just, I'm a shy, to a certain extent, I'm shy, where I don't like people to know who I am until I know who they are. And I'm selective of people who I let know who I am. I'm a very selective person. And it's good to a certain extent, but then I black out other people sometimes, and I don't think that that's necessarily good, because then I don't learn from them, and I don't find out what they're really like either, because they might be doing the same thing.
I'm surprised you agreed to this interview. I mean, based on, you say you're a closed person,
yeah,
and yet you were willing to do this,
mm-hmm,
and you've been very frank with me.
Why? I am, well, I talked to Dr. Crane about it. And he thought that it would be really good. And I trust Dr. Crane. So, I don't know. I like to do different things. I mean, experience different things.
You're closed, but you're experimental.
Yeah, I'm closed, but I'll experiment a little bit. I had my reservations. I was wondering, I'm like, should I really do this or not? I don't know. I just thought it would be a good experience. And I knew I'd be getting a tape.
Yeah.
So, I think things like that are good to keep around for later on. You know, like sometimes I'll write down my feelings, and then a year later I'll go back and read them, and I'll think, how could you ever have thought of that, you know?
You keep a diary?
No, I don't keep a diary. I should. I really would enjoy it if I did, but a lot of times I don't have time. I used to try to keep one, and now I'll just write down things periodically and go back and look at them later.
Okay, let's take a crack at that one. As you can read from the question,
mm-hmm,
a number of students indicated they needed no improvement in the ability or the above areas, the ability to listen to others, etc., to give and receive love, to get along with others. Now, when I first read that, I said, what in the world is going on? Is Michigan State, this is Michigan State students, I said,
mm-hmm,
are these the most insensitive students around, or what?
I think people like to think that they're very open. I like to think I'm very open, but I realize sometimes I'm not. I do realize that, but people like to make themselves look and feel better about themselves. And these surveys they have are hilarious, because I've had to have a survey done on my floor, and the women on my floor have said that they've confronted issues and different things like that, like roommate problems or noise in the hall. And I know, since I'm the RA, I know that they haven't. Or they've said that they've helped me with programming, different, you know, different programs and different functions that we've had on the floor. And I know I haven't received the help that is indicated on the forms. I mean, I think people like to say what they wish they would do.
Well, they're lying.
Say that they're doing it. Yeah, they are. They're lying. They're trying to make themselves look better when they do it. Like it says, the ability to listen to others. Women come to me and tell me their problems, tell me what, you know, different situations, like my roommate this, my roommate's that, and I'm like, have you ever told her that's how you feel? No, but she should know. No, she shouldn't know. She obviously hasn't been raised or brought up with the same values you have, and she might not know. If you don't tell her, then she's not going to know. And then they'll say, well, I've told my roommate this, and I've told my roommate that. What has your roommate told you? Well, I don't know. Well, she told me that you two talked about it, and she felt like this. I didn't know she felt like that. Well, because you weren't listening to her. You were a little bit busy with your own feelings, that you weren't open enough to her.
What are some of the standard problems that they talk about? They come in here and they say, Jane isn't what? She's throwing her dirty laundry on the floor?
Jane isn't clean enough for me. Jane is too clean for me. Jane smokes. Jane doesn't smoke. Anything and everything that could possibly go wrong usually does. And a lot of times they won't talk to me about it. I'll just realize that something's going on in the room, because you can tell when one day they're all eating together and everyone's happy, and the next day they're on different ends of the cafeteria, or they're not walking down the hallway talking, they're just walking down the hallway glaring at each other. A lot of people just don't even try to compromise. I mean, this is the way I live, and you better accept it. I mean, that's their attitude. Especially when they come in as freshmen. Most of the people who come up here have never had to share a room before, and sometimes they get thrown into a room with three other girls or five other in Acres. They live four and five people. And it's almost funny when you hear the different problems. I mean, I don't tell them it's funny, but I sit in my room and I kind of laugh about it to myself just because a lot of it is so petty. A lot of it they could work out.
And what are some of those problems again? You've mentioned a few.
Some, like smoking. My roommate smokes and she won't open the window while she's smoking. Well, have you told her that? You would like her to open the window? No, I would never tell her that. Well, why not? If that's something you'd like her to do, she might be willing to do it. Or my roommate, when she cleans the bathroom, she'll use this kind of cleaner and not that kind. Or she'll, can you believe when she cleaned the bathroom, she used this rag? I was saving that rag to do dishes. Well, how did she know that? If you didn't tell her, she's not going to know. She's going to use whatever rag she sees available. I mean, it's just funny. Why didn't you tell her little things like that? I mean, you can always go and get another rag for a dollar or something, whatever. I mean, but people will let that ruin friendships.
Do you think that men are different than women in this regard of basic communication?
I think, no, I don't think so. Men just, like, will blow things off. Men won't let things bother them like women will. I think women will let it.
Suppress it or not? You say the men suppress it? Or what are you saying?
I'm saying that women will suppress it, and it'll eat inside of them. They won't say anything, and it'll bother them. Men will, oh, why did he do that, jerk, whatever, and then it'll be gone. They won't even think about it again. Or if they do, they'll come right out and say, I don't like this, that, and the other, and it'll be over. When women finally do confront situations, it'll be, a lot of times it's an emotional attack more than an attack of the issues that are involved.
What's going on here? Is this a difference in a simple upbringing? Is there some genetic difference here? What's, explain it.
I think women are more emotional than men. And so when you confront a woman, a lot of times they'll take it as she's not confronting the issues, she's not confronting the situation, she's attacking me as a person. And you're not, you're just saying, I don't agree with this, you know, could we try to do something? I had my, last year I had a roommate, we were best friends, and we decided to live together. And it got to the point where we just could not live together. And when I kept trying to talk to her, and she didn't want to talk to me, she didn't want to face the fact that we had problems. And finally I asked her if she thought it'd be better if we moved out, if we didn't live together anymore. And I told her that it wasn't that I didn't like her as a friend anymore, I just couldn't live with her. We couldn't get along living together. And she took that as a personal attack. And after she moved out of the room, I haven't talked to her since. I tried to talk to her a couple times. I'm like, gosh, we were best friends. You know, what happened to that friendship? It didn't mean anything to you or what? And she just thought that I was attacking her as a person. Although she did realize and did agree that we couldn't live together anymore. You know, she felt that I was right, you know, in that assumption. But she just thought that I was attacking her personality. And it wasn't. I was just saying that we are not compatible to live together. Not that we're not compatible to be friends. Our lifestyles were too different. You know, we slept at different times. We did things so differently that we couldn't live together. And she didn't realize that that was a problem. It wasn't a problem with her personality, per se. And we haven't talked since. It's kind of terrible.
Scary. But you speak directly.
You
sound almost more like a stereotypical male in the sense that if somebody asks you a question, you get an answer.
Mm-hmm. I'm very direct. Rather than letting your emotions. To the point where when people do something that hurts me, I'll let them know that it bothered me. But then, you know, if they say they're sorry or whatever and they accept it, I forgive people for almost anything that they've done to me. I think in a way it's because I grew up with two older brothers, and a lot of times they were my companions and my comrades, and I always did everything with them. So I have a lot of their values And I'm very understanding. I always try to see all sides of the issue.
It sounds like you had a very good, or still have a good relationship with your brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that college has taught you a different way of approaching problems, or do you see only that you have accumulated a whole lot of information? I mean, obviously you've learned a lot about engineering,
mm-hmm.
but when you compare it to the way you were thinking in high school as opposed to now, do you see a difference in the way you attack problems?
Yeah. Oh, of course, in your classes you learn how to, you know, deal with problems. And, I mean, I would never have, in high school, never known how to do a stats problem or anything like that. I mean, I just didn't have the knowledge. In your classes, you learn how to deal with problems related to your field. But since you are around so many, such a large group of people, you learn how to deal with problems on a day-to-day basis. You know, how to talk to people, how to... If you do have a problem, how to confront them, how to understand people better. I think when you go, going away to college is much better than, it's a better learning experience than if you stay home. Because when you stay home, you stay with the same set of values that you've always had. And when you go away, you're forced to at least recognize the fact that other people live differently and that you're going to have to at least understand them and accept them. Because when you move away from home, you're going to be confronted with different people. When you get a job, you're going to be confronted with different people with different values. Going away with the large community.
Let me ask you one last question here. This generation of college students has been labeled the me generation. quite materialistic, not concerned with a lot of causes in society and so forth, mm-hmm. really not supporting civil rights because the civil rights movement has died down and a number of other issues. Is that right? Are you just out there grubbing for yourself? You just want that high material standard of living? Where are the basic concerns of collegians today?
I think we are very concerned with ourselves and how are we going to make ourselves happy? How are we going to achieve the standards of living that we want? But the way I look at it, a lot of the older generations always look down and label the younger generations. And I'm sure when we're older, we'll look down and say, well, we were never like that. You know, everyone is always concerned with themselves, but
you're not out there marching with the civil rights demonstrators.
Yeah.
And the kids in the 60s were.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think there's any difference between the kids now and the 60s?
I think in the 60s, the problems were larger than they are now. You know, the civil rights problems, and there still is a problem, but we realize that there's a problem, and there changes have been made, and they are still being made. And I don't think there's the necessity to get out there and to make people aware. Like in the 60s, people weren't as aware as they are now.
But still, has there ever been a sign of you which wanted to go out and save the world? Which wanted to be a Mother Teresa?
You know, you always do want to make this big impact on the world, but I think I realize that, you know, it's not, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think I'm going to make a large impact on the world. I think I'm realistic. I mean,
so
you always want to.
What's going to be on your gravestone?
What?
What's going to be your epitaph or whatever? She worked 40 years with an engineering firm and raised two kids and had a car and a two-car garage.
Well, I mean, I think I'm going to make an effect on my children. And hopefully, you know, they can make an effect on someone. I mean,
they'll grow up to be engineers, too.
One day. Well, I mean, I do hope to make an effect on someone, but I don't think it's going to be on the grand scale of the world. I hope to affect maybe one. I mean, hopefully I'll affect a small number of people, but nothing spectacular.